Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Business ownership is hard work. It's fueled by passion. The hours can be long, and the skin in the game can be significant. The goal of business ownership is to create a business that supports you through your working years and provides a nest egg for your retirement. But time has a way of slipping by, and it's very easy to put off planning your business transition. But doing so and getting it wrong can be costly. Welcome to the Make It Right podcast. I'm Janet Eastman, and this week on the show, it's part two with my guest, Patrick Bradley, who continues to outline strategies to get your business transition ready. We pick up the conversation discussing the importance of keeping current on your company valuation.
For too many people, they just don't appreciate that the shareholder agreement or this continuity agreement or this buy-sell agreement, it's a living, breathing document that should be updated on a regular basis to reflect changing owner objectives, changing company dynamics, as well as current business valuations.
Right. So how often do you update that?
Well, that's very interesting. I think the best advice would be for a business owner to consider having their business value updated every year. And that way, if there is a trigger event that happens within the next 12 months, everybody knows what the value is. Mm-hmm. Because when a trigger event happens, whoever the seller is, they want to get the highest price. And whoever the buyer is wants to pay the lowest price. So all of a sudden, there's this disparity that's happening immediately. Mm-hmm. But if we just agree, or let's say if you and Bob as business owners, if you just agree that every June 30th, you're going to have your company valued or appraised, and if there is a trigger event that happens within the next 12 months, that's the value. Mm-hmm. So Bob dies, company's worth $6 million, either the company or you owe him $3 million. And hopefully you have the funding to be able to do that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So then, okay, so we've been talking about death of an owner. So there's life insurance involved, right? Life insurance is usually purchased for business owners through their business. What role does it play in that agreement?
Well, you are correct. Most businesses own life insurance, not all of them, but most do. And with life insurance, let me just address two specific issues that I often see. One is that the life insurance policy is underfunded. And what I mean by that is the annual cost of the insurance, or the annual premium, as we call it here in the States, is not sufficient to maintain the death benefit for the life of the insured. Oh. So unfortunately, these underfunded policies might die before the insured does. Well, that's not a very good situation. Mm-mm. So one thing that my company can do is perform a life insurance audit. So we simply will do an examination on that life insurance policy to make sure that its integrity is intact and that that death benefit will be available for the lifetime of the insured. And if it's not going to be, then we come up with some remedial action. It might mean pay more premiums or a higher annual outlay into the policy to keep it going. So that's one problem that we see, underfunded policies. The second problem that we see is, what is the specific role of life insurance in the agreement? And let me give you another example. So you and Bob own a company. It's worth $6 million. Let's just pretend that the company owns $3 million insuring you, $3 million insuring Bob. Now, in one scenario, if Bob dies and the money comes into the corporation, you, as a sole shareholder, you give that $3 million to Bob's spouse. She gives you Bob's stock. She's happy, she's got cash, you're happy, you own the company lock, stock, and barrel. Mm-hmm. Now that would be the best scenario. But too often, if the life insurance proceeds are not specifically identified as to how to treat them, here's what might happen. So you and Bob have a $6 million company. You have $3 million of life insurance. Bob dies. The life insurance comes into the company. Now, what's the value of the company? It could be $6 million plus the $3 million of cash from the life insurance. Now it's worth $9 million. Mm-hmm. So you, as the survivor, you now owe Bob's spouse half of $9 million, or $4.5 million. You have $3 million of which to put a down payment on, and now you have debt of $1.5 million.
Yeah.
So here, one of your key persons just died, and you have another $1.5 million of debt that you get to pay off. So you're not too happy.
Yeah.
So those two issues, again, if manufacturing company owners or any business owner are working with qualified advisors to be able to help them have a better understanding of how the life insurance policy is designed and what the specific role of life insurance is in the agreement, we can avoid those two issues.
Yeah. So do you have a couple of quick bullets that you can give us on how you structure the life insurance policy to actually complement that buy-sell agreement so they do work together and you don't have that issue?
Sure. You want to make sure that the life insurance is coming from the right place, going to the right place, at the right time, in the right amount. So what I'm referring to, coming from the right place. Who owns this policy? Is it owned by, if I use you and Bob again, is this a policy where Bob owns the life insurance policy on you and you own one on him? Or is the life insurance policy owned by the company? And either one of those arrangements can work out just fine. You know, as long as if Bob owns a life insurance policy on you and you own one on him, then each one of you should be the respective beneficiary. Mm-hmm. So as long as the ownership and the beneficiary arrangements of these life insurance policies are done properly, we can avoid serious complications, namely an income tax problem. And we want to make sure that the policy is going to deliver the money at the right time. You know, I recently had a conversation with a business owner who, this was a family company. The family owner wanted to maintain ownership. He's getting up there in age, and the life insurance premiums were becoming too expensive, and they just let it lapse. Well, here's the gentleman, he still owns a substantial portion of this company, and there is no life insurance to buy his stock when he dies. So that policy, it's too bad that they didn't use a different structure or design that policy differently a number of years ago. And then we also just want to make sure that the policy is going to deliver the right amount of cash.
Mm-hmm. So this entire process takes a lot of thought. You have already put out the scenarios of 5 to 10 years. So is that how long leaders should be thinking or getting ready to start to think about their transition and consider their options? Like if I started my business last year and I want to retire in 10 years, I should already be thinking about my exit strategy with my partner.
Well, at the very basic level, you would want to be paying attention to these trigger events that we talked about, mm-hmm. and how you want them to be treated in your life in your buy-sell agreement. You know, for death, disability, divorce, quit, fire, retire. But as far as the actual transition of new owner, new leadership, new management, you know, oftentimes that takes years. Now, if you planned on owning your new business for 10 years and you just got started, you know, I know that's not the first thing that's on your mind. You're busy trying to figure out how to get cash flow in the door and get your product out. But in a fairly short period of time, it would be a good idea to start thinking about, you know, how do you want to transfer that business? Is that to a third party? Is that a family member? Is that management?
Right. I guess, well, and we all know that anything can happen at any time, right? So you need to be thinking about these things. So how should people get started?
Well, I'll go back to the response that I gave earlier. The business owner should really take a look at where do they want to be in the future? Is that, do they want to sell their company to a third party, a family member, management, or employees? And where are they now? And really look at their company as if they were an outside investor. What are some things that you might need to tidy up? And then find somebody that's going to help you close that gap. Because there will be a gap, just a matter of how big it is. So maybe start with their existing attorney or their existing accountant and other advisors and find out. But what I would suggest is there are enough people, whether it's in Canada or in the States, there are enough people that are focused on transition planning or exit planning or business continuity planning to really help the business owner smooth that transition and not make it such a distracting process that they put it by the wayside.
Right. I got one last question for you, Patrick.
Yes.
I think that when business owners have a family-run business, presumably they think that they are going to transition to the next generation or whatever. And I'm sure you've run into the situation where that was the plan, but then maybe the second generation just decides that they don't really want to do that business. And so what happens then?
If the second generation just does not want to at all?
Yeah, like, yeah, if they've, you know, the father says, well, my son's going to take this over. He's been working in the department and whatever. He'll take the business over. What happens then?
Well, let me give you two real quick scenarios.
Sure, great.
I had one scenario where a second generation was not ready to take over ownership or leadership, and first generation wanted to slow down and kind of, you know, enjoy his later years. So they gave a compensation package to one of the leaders who was a key person in the organization and said, hey, if you stick around here for 10 years and you mentor my son, then I'll give you a compensation package. It's a discriminatory package. So, you know, we can, you know, whether it's additional benefits or a big bonus at the end of 10 years if you meet certain key performance indicators. And in that example, at about year, I believe it was year 7 or 8, second generation was ready to take over and he's now the CEO. But if that second generation clearly is not going to be involved, well, then you better, that business owner better take a look at how can he tee up his company to make it attractive to a third party.
Right.
Or maybe to a friendly competitor. Or other management.
And then he goes through those.
And then I think you were going to say go through those same process of where do you want to be?
Yeah.
Where am I now? Who can help me close the gap? Right.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm sure you've seen some really interesting stories, Patrick, and scenarios, and I'd love to speak to you again sometime. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Janet. I enjoyed it very much.
Patrick Bradley is the personal and business planning advisor at Manufactured Financial Solutions. That is our show for this week. I hope you learned something and maybe it prompted you to do some investigating. You can follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook and subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. I'm Janet Eastman, and until next time, thanks very much for listening to the Make It Right podcast.